This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. A big development boom is anticipated along Main Street now that full federal funding has been granted for the streetcar extension to UMKC. Meantime, COVID is delaying some big office deals around town. Kevin Collison, who knows as much about development as any journalist in Kansas City, is here to update us. Kevin is the editor and publisher of City Scene KC that can be found at cityscenekc.com. Kevin, nice to have you. Welcome.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Good to hear your voice.
It looks like the streetcar extension is going to be a very big deal, at least for Main Street and so much of Kansas City. Tell us about that.
Well, yeah, they actually, even when this thing was a bit uncertain about what its future was going to be as far as getting federal funding, there was already some pretty aggressive land acquisitions going on and some people moving ahead with some pretty ambitious redevelopment projects. The old Netherland Hotel around 39th and Main and its companion building, Monarch Storage Building, was bought and renovated into apartments, and this was all on the if come of the streetcar. And in recent months, it's almost like the Oklahoma land rush going on. We've had several major acquisitions all along that Main Street corridor. You've got Mac Properties, which is the firm that's been redeveloping a lot of apartments along Armour, buying a big corner where the U.S. Bank is at Armour and Main, and they have a yet to be determined, but significant residential project in mind and maybe some other things. You've got a St. Louis outfit called Lux Living, which probably doesn't go down too well in the when you're lobbying for incentives. But anyway, they have an option on the Katz drugstore property there at the corner of Westport Road and Main. And they are planning to do a renovation of the old drugstore and build apartments behind it. You've got
and that building has a lot of sentimental value attached to it, right? A lot of people are interested in the Katz drugstore. Yeah.
It's just a great relic from a fun era in Kansas City history. It's on the local landmark status. It's got this great blend of Art Deco and Art Modern. And it's always been a landmark on Main Street for as long as I can remember. So definitely a lot of people excited about its prospects for being renovated and it would be incorporated actually into this apartment deal where they would have their amenities for the residents in the old drugstore and they'd actually talk about putting a swimming pool on the rooftop. So it's kind of an interesting reuse of that building. And then just down the street a little bit at 45th and Main, where there's a Holiday Inn that's been acquired by a company that's got the same address as a Financial Holding Corp, which of course is the big Merriman family firm, and they have plans on the rumor mill anyway of doing a big residential project there, although nothing's been filed. And then just last week, this where Conklin Fangman car dealership is at around 32nd and Main, about a 5.5-acre site has been put on the market. And literally, this is again within 50 yards of a planned streetcar stop. So there's just a tremendous amount of activity going on in anticipation of the streetcar extension.
So you're saying that developers were actually making deals in anticipation and in hope that the federal funding was going to come through for this project.
Yeah. Which, you know, again, is I consider that to be a big vote of confidence in the city core. We all know how crazy things have been in D.C. And although the folks at the Streetcar Authority were reasonably confident they were going to get $174 million from the Fed, there was absolutely no guarantees. I mean, anything could happen. So when they got the news actually in December that the Federal Transit Administration had recommended that funding and then it was finalized just last week and they had a signing ceremony down at the Streetcar Maintenance Barn, obviously confirmed the confidence that these developers had that this is going to be kind of the next frontier of redevelopment in our city.
You know, I have my sense of Main Street is, Kevin, is that there are a lot of stretches of that street that are really going to benefit from this streetcar extension because our Main Street needs a little bit of love right now.
It does. It does. And in fact, what's fascinating, Kevin Klinkenberg, who's the head of Midtown KC now, which used to be Main Core. I was chatting with him the other day because, you know, his whole territory takes in that streetcar corridor as well as over to Broadway. And he was telling me, like, back in the 50s, there were 70,000 people who lived in that kind of Midtown area of Kansas City. Hmm. And right now we've only got a fraction of that. So there's an infrastructure that was built, you know, 70, 80, 90 years ago for a lot more people living in that core area of Kansas City. And, you know, you can tell when you drive down Main Street now, you know, there's some big buildings that have been, you know, very underutilized or even vacated over the years. There's vacant lots. There's a, you know, there's just a evidence that at one time it was a bustling corridor, and this streetcar looks like it's going to help restore some of that energy and bring back some of those people. And I, you know, I really do believe in 5-10 years, the streetcar won't be finished until early 2025. You know, you're going to really have a different feel all the way from, you know, downtown out to the University of Missouri, Kansas City.
I assume that you anticipate that there'll be continuing redevelopment as the months pass and the streetcar line construction begins to happen.
Well, I do. But I mean, you know, again, a lot of these are announcements that I just mentioned to you. And in fact, the 45th and Main thing is still, they haven't even filed a plan. So there's still hoops that need to be gone through. I mean, they need to figure out what the market demand is going to be. And as you know, and I know, there's been a tremendous amount of new apartment construction all over the metro over the past few years. So, you know, the timing of how this is going to happen is probably uncertain. A lot of it also depends on what kind of atmosphere they've got at City Hall, because I have a hunch that at least a few of these developers are going to need some kinds of incentives, because, you know, you got to tear down buildings or you got to build on places that have been previously used by other businesses. So, you know, it's not an easy slam dunk, but I do think all this, you know, all this and more is likely going to happen unless we really go into the toilet as far as our local economy.
We're going to talk about apartments here. I mean, the apartment building boom continues, and you just can't help but wonder, when's it going to stop?
I hear you, Steve. In fact, there is anecdotal evidence.
We may have just lost Kevin Collison. There you are. You cut out for a second, Kev, but you're back.
Oh, sorry. But Colliers International, which is a big real estate firm here in town, well, all over the nation, put out a report at the end of the third quarter, which, of course, now is several months ago. But anyway, at that point, they described Central Kansas City, which is the submarket that would include downtown and the Main Street corridor and the plaza, I assume, as being 94% occupancy rate. So, you know, that's not the 96% that you're seeing in a couple of other sections of the city, but it does show that, you know, there's definitely people renting these apartments. But we do have a lot of stuff coming online just over the past year, and even maybe the last 6 months in downtown. You had the City Club apartments at 20th and Main open up. You had Artistry KC over in the East Crossroads open up. You had Reverb open up, which is in the Crossroads. And then you had a big project called Second and Delaware open up in the River Market. And that added probably at least 1,000, if not more, apartments to the downtown market. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how quickly those are absorbed, what kinds of things that the landlords are going to have to do to try to make it interesting for people to move into.
Right.
But it does show, I just actually was talking to somebody at the downtown council yesterday, because they're putting out a resident survey for the first time in 7 years, just asking people who live downtown what they'd like to see. But they estimate the downtown population since the last survey came out in 2013 has grown from roughly 22,000 to over 30,000 in just the past 7 years. So we're definitely seeing more bodies wanting to live in that urban environment.
You know, I just noted that a city council committee just recently unanimously passed legislation that would require developers to set aside like 20% of their units for cheaper rent. This is in response to the whole affordable housing dilemma in Kansas City. How are developers reacting to that? How much of a difference is that going to make?
The developers I've talked to tell me that the the requirements that 10% of the units, the council legislation is interesting. It's got something called a 10% for affordable and 10% for extremely affordable. And the 10% affordable says you have to have a income of 70% of the metropolitan median average, I believe. And that's very similar to the requirements of a lot of affordable deals, particularly ones that are financed by the state through the Missouri Housing Development Commission. They've got what they call the low income housing tax credit. And, you know, I think the feeling I get from developers are that's something they can work with. But the second tier, the extremely affordable that's on there, calls for people who only make 30% of the household income, which gets down to rents of like $500 a month. And I'm told by developers that that's just going to be impossible to do. And they're saying what could happen is people say, okay, we're going to develop apartments, and we're going to develop apartments that we can get market rate and we don't have to use tax incentives for, which could end up increasing the number of more upscale units and produce fewer affordable units. So it could backfire, putting those kinds of really, you know, 30% is a very, very low income.
Well, does that suggest that some of these incentives aren't even necessary in the first place?
Well, some projects are being built without incentives. You know, there are folks, I think this outfit from St. Louis, Lux Living that I mentioned, they've also got a project that they're pursuing down in Crossroads at 19th and Broadway. And at this point, they are not talking about seeking incentives. Now, that could change. You know, they haven't worked through all their numbers. But we have, in some ways, gotten to the point where they are making enough money in rents to make these affordable to build without seeking property tax abatements and incentives, which, you know, is a good thing. That's what we've been trying to move towards. But on the flip side, it will make it more difficult to develop affordable housing because, you know, they'll have to charge the higher rents. And, you know, Steve, this is something, and you and I have talked about this. I just, you know, the city has, to its credit, stepped up and really tried to do something to address the affordable housing issue in town. But in the meantime, the state of Missouri, which probably has one of the most potent weapons to help encourage more affordable housing development to be done, which is called that LIHTC program, Low Income Housing Tax Credit, it was cut out of the budget for a couple of years because of Greitens. And they did restore it this year, but at a lower rate. And I know for a fact that there were two affordable housing apartment projects proposed for the riverfront that failed to move forward because they did not get any of these LIHTC tax credits. So I just, you know, from my perspective, looking at development, looking at the whole affordable thing, I just wish that some of the same pressure that's put on City Hall would be applied to Jeff City to do a much better job, because they're far more equipped to be able to help both Kansas City and St. Louis deal with this common problem.
We're visiting with Kevin Collison of City Scene KC about development, recent trends in development in downtown Kansas City. Again, Kevin is the editor and publisher of City Scene KC, found at cityscenekc.com. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. Lila from Midtown called Kevin, and she wanted to know, I've been a resident here for 8 years, but worry what the streetcar expansion will do to rental rates in her area.
Well, I'm sure they are going to go up. I mean, I know there was an apartment building, I can't remember the address, where the owner decided he wanted to renovate it and upgrade it, and the people were forced out. I think they'll have an opportunity to go back in there if they want to, but the point is that, yes, I do think that rents are going to go up in the Main Street corridor area, because the streetcar is just going to be attracting more people, which again gets to the point where, you know, we need to get ahead of that as a city to try to make sure that we preserve what's there right now for affordable housing, and at the same time make sure that the future development that goes along there does have, you know, options for people to have affordable apartments. But I think Lila, I believe, is going to, you know, I'm sure this is going to put pressure on moving rents up, at least, you know, when these new projects start opening up.
Let's go to some calls here. Jamie from Kansas City, Missouri. Jamie, you're on Up to Date with Kevin Collison.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to ask Mr. Collison about a particular development along the Truce Corridor he wrote about last month. There were folks on Twitter saying that this particular development was gentrification, but Mr. Collison said it was affordable and that it wasn't gentrification since people were not being displaced. But it's my understanding that, and I hope he knows the specific, you know, project I'm talking about, but it's my understanding that gentrification takes place when developers go into a community and raise the cost of living, which over time will inevitably drive out existing community members and families. So I guess I just kind of wanted to hear his thoughts on that.
Yeah, Kevin, can you tell us, just fill us in on which project you're talking about along Troost?
Well, we're talking about Troost. There, there's been a lot of reinvestment going along in Troost. A lot of it, I believe, has been fueled by the growth of jobs and activity at Hospital Hill. But all the way from downtown out to roughly Armour, there's been a lot of new apartments built. I think the project this woman was talking about is there's a vacant lot at 29th and Forest. In fact, it's a vacant block from what I can tell. And it's been empty for years. And it's right behind some of the commercial buildings there on Troost at 31st Street. And this developer wants to go in and build, I think, about a dozen townhouses. And they would be roughly 1,500 square feet to 1,900 square feet, 2 to 3 bedrooms with a garage and, you know, all the things you'd expect in a townhouse. So he is going to be looking at rents from, I believe, I'd have to have it in front of me, but I think it was around $1,500 a month to $1,900 a month. That is lower than what the market rate rent is. And this gets into the whole debate over what affordable is. Some people would think a 2-bedroom townhome with a garage and a patio and all that good stuff for $1,500 a month is a reasonable deal. Other people looking at what rents are in some neighborhoods close by would say that's really high. My argument on this whole gentrification issue, and it's such a thorny issue, is that right now that's a vacant lot. It's been a vacant lot for decades. These guys want to come in and invest money and build housing. Now, is it affordable by some people's terms? No. Is it below what market rate rents are these days? Yes. And there are many apartments that have gone up along that Troost corridor that are very similar in what their rental structures are. And again, these are all properties and developments that have taken over what had been vacant lots, what had been empty buildings for decades. Nobody was living in any of those apartments, any of those buildings. There was nothing being torn down and people being displaced to build those. And that, in my mind, means it's not really gentrification. Now, over the years, will property values go up? Yeah. Isn't that what we want as a city, to improve the value of our city, to make homeowners have more equity in their properties? I think so. I mean,
it's really remarkable to me, Kevin, that that property at Troost and Forest is going for $1,500 to $1,800 a month. That's a big change for our city.
It is, and again, for years we've talked about the lack of investment on the east side and along Troost. And of course, Troost has always been our symbolic racial divide. Now we're finally getting people who want to invest in those areas, who want to build things, who want to renovate what had been empty buildings, who want to bring businesses back to what had been empty storefronts. And, you know, we're getting this blowback. And it's kind of hard to really get your head around. And it's, again, a very tricky issue. But I guess when we were chatting earlier with the woman from Midtown, you know, gentrification to me is what happened with this building. And I wish I could remember the name of it, where somebody who owns it has decided he wants to renovate it, he wants to bump up the rents, and the people living there have to find a new place to live. Now, that may be a little too black and white for some people, but I define that as gentrification. I don't see gentrification as taking empty buildings and empty lots that have been sitting for decades and putting money into them and making them homes for people a bad thing. I really don't.
Let me ask you about COVID and the impact that COVID is having on development around the metro. What have you seen there? Have things slowed down? Have things not slowed down? What's been the overall impact?
Well, it's interesting. I don't do a lot of, I don't do anything about what's going on out in the burbs because, you know, there's plenty of people keeping an eye on that. But what I hear is, there's the particularly the residential development industry has been doing very well despite COVID. I mean, there's been a lot of apartments being built. A lot of houses are being built. So that means that the labor market is still pretty tight for carpenters and electricians and plumbers and everybody else involved in that construction industry. What's been hard has material prices have gone up because of all the delays in the supply chain because of COVID. So it's been a more challenging environment, not so much, on the building side as far as, a demand for product from people, but just being able to fill the demand because the workforce is still getting paid very well because they can ask for a premium. And it's in prices of things like lumber have been going up because it's just been more difficult to get things imported from places like China. You've had forest fires out on the West Coast. It's just it's kind of a it's a more challenging environment from what I've been told by developers.
You know, one of the projects I wanted to ask you about specifically that's right in the downtown area is the Waddell and Reed building going up at 14th and Baltimore. Now, the project's underway, maybe halfway completed, and then we learned that Waddell and Reed has been acquired by an Australian global financial firm, and that's making everyone wonder what's going to happen with this 18-story tower being constructed in the middle of our downtown. Do we know what's going to happen?
We really don't. I mean, we do know that Waddell & Reed was always going to be a tenant in this building. It's being developed by a private entity that involves actually the Merriman family and Burns & McDonald. So they are the developer. Waddell & Reed is the tenant. I assume the lawyers have made sure that whatever lease, 15-year lease, I believe, that Waddell & Reed signed is one that they're not going to be able to back out of without major penalties. So from all I know is the building is going to get completed. Now, who's going to go in there is a whole different question. You know, originally it was going to be the headquarters of Waddell & Reed. I have, you know, I don't know if the company's going to completely lose its independent identity and therefore won't even need a headquarters. You know, I think the most optimistic thing would be that this big Australian firm would decide, hey, the cost of living and rents are pretty reasonable in Kansas City compared to the West and East Coast. Maybe we should make this a big North American headquarters. I don't know. That would be my most optimistic prediction. My most pessimistic prediction would be, you know, they finish it and they just use it as kind of low rent back office space, which we've seen also going on in Kansas City. Because, again, you know, even though we know things, the price of things have gone up here in town with rents and all the rest, we're still a small proportion of what people have to pay in places like LA and San Francisco and New York and Seattle. So companies do see this as a place to do business that's much more affordable than their coastal operations.
I was going to say, what do we know about the future of the downtown office market in the wake of COVID? Yeah. Because a lot of folks are saying now that everyone's learned how to work from home and we don't need fancy, expensive downtown office buildings to house workers anymore.
Well, that's a great question, Steve, and I'm sure there are people far smarter about real estate than me trying to figure it out, because there was, you know, there was this huge, long debate at City Hall over this Strata office project that was going to go above one of the buildings in the Power and Light building where the Yard restaurant and bar is. That was going to be a 25-story project. They'd hoped to break ground last year. Nothing's happened. I'm sure a lot of it had to do with the fact that they just couldn't find the tenants to make it worthwhile starting construction. And then there was another smaller office building proposed for across from Barney Ellis Plaza, and I think at the corner of 14th and Wyandotte, called Platform Venture. And that never took off because, again, you know, there's just this uncertainty, as you mentioned, about how much space our company's going to need. And how the work environment is going to look like in the next, you know, 10, 15 years now that we've had COVID and we've seen, you know, that people can work from home. But I got to tell you, in the meantime, you know, anytime I go out to Southern Johnson County, there does seem to be a tremendous amount of new office construction going on out there. So, you know, it's downtown's always had a bit of an uphill battle as long as I've been a reporter here. Getting companies interested in locating their facilities downtown. There have been some good ones that have come in, but, you know, there has been this steady dribble of people and jobs out to the suburbs. And so, you know, you throw COVID in there and it just is a double whammy. It just seems the biggest success story in downtown, at least over the past 10 years or so, has been the increasing number of people who actually live there. And again, you know, some new services are starting to come in to serve those people. There's a new Dollar General DGX store that opened up in the City Club Apartments. And yeah, you know, but these are things that if you live downtown, you need to run out and get some cleaning supplies or buy some milk or whatever.
You got it.
You know, those are the kinds of little businesses you need to have.
That's Kevin Collison. He's the editor and publisher of City Scene KC, found at cityscenekc.com. Kevin, always appreciate your time. Thanks for all the insights.
Oh, always great.